The Library of Congress has unveiled a new plan to preserve the country's audio archives. As you can imagine, recordings from the earliest days of the music industry are deteriorating, and even some digital recordings are in danger because rapid technological changes have made their formats obsolete. As NPR's Tom Cole reports, that's where the National Recording Preservation Plan comes in.
This is where video is preserved.
Gene Deanna, head of the Library of Congress Recorded Sound Section, leads the way into a large room with several equipment racks.
See those blue boxes? Those are tape robots, and they're loaded with video cassette decks. And they are able to operate independently of staff once they are set and loaded. And it's something that recorded sound does not have.
A standardized format. For audio, formats range from something that looks like the cardboard center of a toilet paper roll.
These are actually brown wax cylinders from the 1890s. One stands out in particular. I have a William McKinley campaign song from 1897.
To a fragile 16-inch disc recorded by NBC Radio in 1939, essentially a giant LP.
It's the original lacquer from Marian Anderson's concert recital at the Lincoln Memorial.
And then there's a more modern format that presents its own preservation challenges, says Sam Berlofsky. He's the chair of the National Recording Preservation Board, which was established by Congress in the same 2000 law that launched this whole project.
You hear stories about things recorded on hardware and mixed on hardware, or I should say software, things like Pro Tools editing software, 10 years ago, but the new version of the software isn't compatible with the digital files that were made 10 and 20 years ago.
The problem with digital files is that archivists often don't know how they were recorded, and Berlofsky says that puts them in just as much danger as those old wax cylinders. So the National Recording Preservation Plan proposes that anyone making digital recordings today encode that information with the sound file. But beyond the technical considerations, there lies a bigger hurdle: access. Tim Brooks is the president of the Association of Recorded Sound Collections and author of a book called Lost Sounds, about the earliest black recording artists.
The reason so many of the sounds from the very earliest days of recording are lost is not because the recordings are lost, but because we have very expansive copyright laws in this country that essentially lock them up and make them unavailable.
For two reasons. The rights holders to those recordings can't be found, or the rights are now owned by the multinational corporations that have absorbed the record labels and who have no reason to bother with stuff that won't make them money. But that assumption is short-sighted, says Dr. Peter Martland, a professor at Cambridge University and author of two books on the British recording industry. He spent nearly a decade researching the archives of EMI Records and saw the label capitalize on its vast holdings.
If this material has a commercial life, no matter how old, and some of the material goes back to 1906, then they will digitize it, and that means it is much more readily available for future exploitation.
And this, too, is one of the National Recording Preservation Plan's recommendations. Collaborations between the public and private sector can benefit both and make recordings available for everyone to hear. But in the end, Sam Berlofsky says the plan is, well,
only a plan, and Washington's full of plans and studies which have been done over the last 200 years. But I think this one could be effective because it is, in effect, a roadmap of how we might approach audio preservation and assure that as much as possible is here for posterity.
Tom Cole, NPR News, Washington.